All right, you listen to King Cam and Junbei podcast and Junbei meets message, and we're talking about chapter 10, the reality behind the ruins. The reality behind the ruins. I'm excited about this. Let's get to it. This is an introduction to African history geared just for you. It's designed to foster a life of learning. And the introduction to African history, it will be done once a week. And it's going to go over a few readings on the continent. And the question is always, are there any other civilizations outside of Kemet and outside of Egypt and those empires? Get this, we have learned a lot about it, but let's get to it. Let's get to it. And these are the sub-regions of Africa. There's the northern region, the western, central Africa, eastern Africa. We're going to be dealing with eastern and southeastern Africa along here. All right. And of course, we're into the book, The Lost Cities of Africa by Basil Davidson. Check that book out in the description. I am an Amazon affiliate. And as an Amazon affiliate, I earn from qualifying purchases. So click the link below, check it out, get you one. It is a great book. All right. Let's get in. And to recap real quick, what did they find by the Limpopo River? What did they find by the Limpopo River? Okay, and who were these people? Who were these people? All right, check out the previous video on that. We had a great discussion, The Builders of the South, part two. Check it out. All right, and is it Hottentot or Batwa? All right, and why were there forts and terraces at Inyanga? Why were there forts and terraces at Inyanga? All right, of course, we're going to identify and discuss the concepts in the book entitled Lost Cities of Africa, Chapter 10. We're in Chapter 10 right now. We got two more chapters, and then we will be done. We got two more chapters, and we'll be done. Trying to see. Okay, yeah, it is working. I'm just trying to make sure the sound is working. I'm trying new things, fam. Trying new things. All right, here we go. Chapter 10, The Reality Behind the Ruins. It is. I love that title. I just roll with it. It was great. So these are the essential questions. How were these points, some points, how was there some points of comparison? Okay. What, you know, how, and to whom was he comparing it with? All right. When was the period of greatness? He has a section two, a period of greatness. You know, of course, I disagree on a lot of things, and that was one of them. All right, we're going to get into it. Was there a point of origin? A point of origin. And lastly, what is now required? All right, you listen to King Cam and Junbei podcast, and you know how we get down. All right, and Junbei means message. All right, let's get to it. Now, how were there some points of comparison? All right, and this is in the first section of chapter 10. That asks, is African sculpture primitive? No, it is not. And then who are we comparing it to? What other standard are we trying to use? Of course, traditional ways they try to traditionally compare everybody in the whole world to Europe. No. Okay, they ask, are the sculptures primitive? And of course, the authors and many people that did the research say no, they was just as advanced, if not more, than many other places. Okay, so how was there some points of comparison? They tried to use art. They tried to compare art, you know, African art with European art. All right, no comparison. Beautiful. Now, how were their points of comparison? Religiously. They ask, is the African religion primitive? No, it is not. No, it is not. Okay. And they try to use that, saying that they're trying to go in and civilize a heathen by using the concept of religion and spirituality. Okay. I'm going to read this. Is the African religion primitive? This is in the book. On the contrary, many African peoples, it transpires, have systems of belief about themselves and the universe that are subtle and developed. We thought ourselves to be educating children, he says, of Belgium, colonial attitudes in the Congo, and that seems simple enough. And now, quite suddenly, it appears that we are dealing with an adult humanity. You're not dealing with children here. You're dealing with grown people who have their own norms, their own culture. How do you feel if you're an adult and another adult talks down to you? Right? Yeah. So the African religion is not primitive. Very often, the opposition between primitive and we're going to get to that. Let me get to it. Let me get to it. So now, some more points of comparison. Who is the authority to call something primitive or non-primitive? By what standard? We see it many times over. We see it in our public, in public and social standings, and even in education. They use some kind of bar or some kind of standard to say you are academically prepared if you meet this standard. Whose authority? Whose standard? Right? Whose authority to what right do you have to call somebody primitive or non-primitive? These are the pros and cons. These are the similarities and differences that we're talking about in this chapter. And normally they're trying to compare African customs to that of Europe. But as this chapter unfolds, they realize that, oh, hold on, it's a lot more advanced than people think. Right? And who has authority to call them civilized or uncivilized, right? And so let's keep it moving, right? Now, there are some points of comparison. In 1517, Barbosa said the Lord of Manapatapa was the Lord of an exceeding great country. He was the king and the ruler of an exceeding great country. It was true. Portugal had armies, but the inland kings in this central area of Southeast Africa had chiefs that had powerful armies. They could not be faded. They could not be touched. They realized that, oh, they have an army. They have a legion. We always talk about the Roman legion. We always talk about the Greeks and Athenians and so on. The Zulus and Manapatapa and all and the great kingdoms in southeastern Africa had powerful armies. They did. They weren't just people throwing sticks and stones. They had a sophisticated military power. Right? It wasn't just Hotep all day long, and it wasn't sculpture making and dancing. No, they were people of culture and people of war. You had to defend yourself. We talked about that. Why did they have fences? Yeah, to defend themselves. Right? So the inland kings had powerful armies as the Portuguese, they messed around and they found out. Okay? What more natural than that they should rule the land. So yes, they had the military, so they should rule their own land. All right. So let's continue. So we have a couple of things. We have a couple of things. We have they try to compare it religiously. They try to compare it militarily. Let's see how else they try to compare it with. Let's see how else. All right. So besides the major cities of Germany, so they tried to make a comparison socially. If you write this down, they try to make a comparison socially. They say, okay, well, we can't get them on a military standpoint, and we can't get them in the just norms and so on. Let's see if they're socially comparable. They find out some other things also concerning social norms and expectations. Besides the major cities of Germany and the Netherlands, besides that, they realized that the people of Europe was backwards themselves. Outside of the major cities of London and so on, once you get in that countryside there, they're just as terrible, if not worse. So it's always amazing how people would say when they leave Europe, everybody is backwards and uncivilized in comparison to the West. No, not necessarily so. The people of Europe are going to Africa during the 14th and 15th centuries, realizing that, oh, these people are way more advanced culturally, politically than we are as a group. What else? And so they went into trade. They also traded in the Southeast Africa in the 15th century. It was very similar to maritime trade in Venice along the Mediterranean. They realized that they had something going here. They realized that the people of Africa, they was developed. It's like a whole new world, a whole new place. All right. Now, economically, how could they compare to them economically? How did they do that? How did they do that? Let's get to it. Let's get to it. Remember last time we talked, they had large pieces of gold. They found it. They found large pieces of gold, and at the Royal Burial Grounds, they found over 70 ounces of gold. Economically, they, like they say in movies, they had their own money. Right? And Manapatapa is a great store of gold. I'm trying to find a page. I'm very excited about this. I'm very excited about this. Yeah, they have their own money. They have their, here it is, here it is. Okay, so Manapatapa is a great store of gold. As I illustrated before, in this part of Africa, that whole strip was full of gold. It was full of it. And of course, check out the map from the previous video. They had their own financial system, which they used gold as the currency, as the standard. Okay? The Portuguese and the Dutch and many others, they found this out. Okay? And so the gold he learned, the Portuguese, they got by trade and not conquest. They didn't go, they had, remember, they had an army. They was ready. They had generals. They had leaders. You couldn't just go in there and do what you want to do, right? And so they had their own financial system. So they tried to compare them religiously or philosophically. They tried to compare them from a military standpoint. They tried to compare them to what else? From a social standpoint, to see, if there was any reason to say that these people are backwards, and they found that they're not. And now, economically, Manapatapa is a great store of gold. Yeah. Let's continue. And there were some other points of comparison politically. Politically, the rulers, according to Davidson, had few absolute powers, and this is where I totally disagree with this man. Okay, once again, in the previous video, we talked about the Europeans giving them titles of priests and chiefs and things like that. No, they were kings and queens in their own right. They mfalme or mwalimu. They were teachers. They was all these things. Okay, so Bantu-speaking people established over such South Central Africa, a system more or less strongly organized and unified states whose relations with each other, though always modified by custom and tradition, were not essentially different than those between the various states and empires in feudal Europe. That's page 290. They had a sophisticated political system that can be easily compared to feudal Europe during this time. So as we teach world history, we always talk about the serf systems and the caste systems of India and so on. Africa had their own socio-political system, and the kings were rulers in and of themselves. And he says, in fact, these rulers, he tries to go on to say that he Davidson calls them paramount chiefs rather than kings. I disagree. Okay? And I'm going to tell you why. Because each nation has their own king, right? Each nation has their own ruler. Each state has their own noble or whatever. Same thing here. He's trying to say, let me read it. Only later would autocratic rulers emerge here. The king of Mani of Congo had no more power than the Manapatapa to legislate outside the framework of tribal law and custom. If he tried to go outside, it would be likely to suffer. He would be likely to suffer the same fate as Wakalimi. Okay. I disagree because the thing is, you're trying to say that they don't have any authority. To be honest, if the president cannot go to another country and exercise the same authority as he does in the United States, come on now, let's think about it. The prime minister of India cannot go to the UK and say, hey, I have the same authority. No, it's not. That's not going to happen. So why are we trying to say that these people have little authority outside their country when it's the same thing going on here? Okay. All right. So, and of course, if you try to go outside, you'd like to suffer the same fate as a Waqlimi. And as I said before, they try to compare, but they try to downgrade that comparison. These men and women were leaders and rulers in their own right, and we've got to respect that. Right? And so comparisons with medieval Europe may quickly mislead. He says they will likely be likely misled much less though than no comparisons at all. Southern African Iron Age society was very different from medieval society of Northern Europe. Yeah, they were. Why? Because of their environment and their situation. All right, let's continue. Now, here's another thing. In 293, he says a period of greatness. Now I'm trying to figure out when was this the period of greatness that he's talking about. Okay, the reason why I put this question, when was it, was because he gives this section a title, Period of Greatness, as if this era was a lightning flash in history. Okay, as if it was just a period of time, 10, 20 years max, and it fizzled out. No, Africa has several eras we can study. Okay, one day I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to get into that. Okay, there are several golden ages we can choose from at any given time. We can go as far back as Kemet or the pre-dynastic period, all the way up until now that's going on in Mali and Burkina Faso and many other places. We have great leaders and empires popping up over and over again. So when was it? I think it has been going on since day one. This whole thing has been a period of greatness. Yes, there are ebbs and flows in society. Okay, but we have to understand that that's the way it is. But as we grow, we need to grow together. All right. Now, was there a point of origin? Was there a point of origin? Okay, trying to. Oh, I forgot to read this. Elsewhere in earlier times, this pattern of society has channeled wealth into the coffers and warehouses of kings and pharaohs. Let me go back to it. You know, I told you we've done this for a long time, right? 294, page 294. Elsewhere in early times, this pattern of society has channeled wealth into the coffers and warehouses of kings and pharaohs, and from such royal wealth as this had come the wealth of priests and temples, and then records of calculation, arithmetic, literacy. Though they were often believed incarnate, the stuff of divinity, African kings and queens never gathered wealth on any such scale, and he is a liar. Yep. He said that they really didn't have wealth, but then here comes Europe. Yeah. It's that, like I said, there's some things I disagree with on, you know, I had to read it because, you know, again, he's trying to make it seem like that it was just a glitch in time where African kings and queens weren't those people. And for some reason, the world is still eating off of Africa, still living off of it. Okay. But let's continue. Let's continue. Okay, was there a point of origin? Davidson titles this section A Period of Greatness as this era, lightning flash in history. I did not say this part, but there's a point of origin. The question was, did it come from several places, or was it just one place? Okay. And there's a couple of theories with that. There's a couple of theories. There is the Phoenician theory, where all civilization came from Phoenicia on into the south, or let me find it, the Gala theory. The Gala theory. What does that mean? The Gala theory means it came from the south northward. Dr. Ben, many other scholars, as the Nile River goes from South Central Africa to north, that's how the civilization went. Okay, and so did it come? The question: did it come from Tanzania, Ethiopia, or did it come from the Mediterranean? Scholarship proves that it came from the deep south, the mountains of the moon, where. And so we're going to get into that really quick. I know we almost out of time. Okay, now, and so the reason why we believe that the culture came from south and from the north is the lightning bird. Man, I touched on it, but then he rung the bell again. The lightning bird. Okay, this is very symbolic. You see Heru, you see the bird in Swahili, where they have it on the post, and it was very symbolic. And you know, it's the lightning bird was that symbol that priests would walk around and they would have, and so the Lelepa, okay, he would hold that staff with the lightning bird on it, and he would walk in the Dili Dili Valley of the South, and other hints of northern origin. And so the Gala theory, they believe that they came from the south. You see these lightning birds in and around and across Africa. Okay. And so I'm just amazed at this, because this culture came from South Central Africa and then moved northward. Okay. And so in the next question he posed, okay, he posed this next question: what is now required? What is now required? I think the requirement is that we do the work and do it well. He mentioned it in his book that the scholars are coming together, doing the excavation work that's necessary to do the research, but we should not rely on other people to do that for us. Okay, I'm teaching history, I'm teaching education. There should be some other scholars out there, doing the research and going to these places and reporting back to the community what they find, be it good or bad. But we need to know. All right. All right, here we go. Let's recap these essential questions. All right. This is pretty old here. And so I'm trying to get back to it. Okay. It doesn't want to do right for me, but that's okay. 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 What were some points of comparison? When was the period of greatness? And was there a point of origin? And what is now required? Okay. We got to do the work. We got to pay attention. Yeah. All right. Now, so what's next? What's next? Next week, we'll discuss chapter 11. Chapter 11. And for more on East Africa, check out Home Team Sankofa Pan-African Series, Dr. Ben, Dr. John Henry Clark, and AE Learning. Check out Pan-African Bookstore if you're in Dallas. And more books, more books. Don't forget, check the description below. We got some more good books out there. Before the Mayflower is a great book by Lerone Bennett. A History of Zimbabwe by Alois S. Mlambo, okay, and The Great Zimbabwe by Charles River Editors, and The Great Zimbabwe by Mark Bazzari. But I got one for the youth. What about the children? Something for the youth, Africa Geography Activity Book. It is good to get them going early. It's good to get them learning early and as soon as possible. All right, so that's about it. Of course, pray for Africa, the unity and peace. And we just got through talking about the reality behind the ruins. The reality is that these were kingdoms and people. And I will talk to you later. And you guys have a good one. You listen to King Cam and Jubei podcast. Jubei means message. Talk to you later. Peace.